I'll do that.
Okay, it is 4 o'clock on December 2nd, and I'd like to call the IGU meeting to order. Erica, could you please call the roll?
Chair Hagenson?
Here.
Vice Chair Dawson?
Here.
Director Wilkins?
Here.
Director Miller?
Here.
Director Kelly?
Here.
Director Wilbur? Director Wall?
Here.
You have a quorum.
Thank you very much. I have a motion to approve the agenda and the consent agenda.
So moved.
Second?
Second.
Okay, thank you. Any modifications? Comments? Hearing none. That's approved. We bring this to public comment. Does anybody like, anybody online want to give a public comment? Nobody online, anybody in the room? No takers today. Okay. I'll close public comment, which brings us to reports and presentations. We'll start with harvest report. So, you guys don't know.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We have online Clay, VT, and Chris Ori, who are going to give the harvest report.
Thanks, Elena. Can you guys hear us in the room?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. First off, we'll start with a shout out to Roger over at Middle Fork for this awesome photo. This photo has made the rounds within Harvest quite a bit lately on all of our management presentations and everything. Really cool milestone. One of their trucks headed down the haul road that's right near Coldfoot there. With that, let's dive into the update. We can go to the next slide. All right, so LNG facility update. The commissioning efforts have come to a close here. Last month, we told you about valve 4304 that had some leak issues. Those were repaired. It was quite the effort to get that done. All of the insulation had to be pulled from the cold box. The repair made, everything put back into good working order. And then the cold box re-insulated with all the perlite, closed back up. I think Chris told you a little bit more about that effort last month, but we're glad to have that one behind us. While that downtime was going on, we were able to get the heavy hydrocarbon skid up and fully commissioned this last month. That's what knocks out your propanes and ethanes, your heavier hydrocarbons out of the mix to give us that nice light LNG that is our spec for the plant. Also during that time, we were able to spend time getting the pre-treatment portion of the facility really tuned and dialed in so that, you know, during commissioning, we have to run some of the equipment in what we call manual mode versus sort of automatic where the computer's running the system. So we were able to get everything really tuned in and transition as much stuff as possible to that auto mode, which is kind of the long-term operations mode. And Chris will tell us a little more about the transition to ops here in a minute. So following those items, we had kind of batch runs of LNG through the month of November to test the facility parameters, ramp up, ramp down, work the loading equipment, get folks trained up, allow vendors to come in and out, getting some of the last bits of work done. But everything there going pretty well. We've been able to deliver on-spec gas. The current gas testing equipment at our facility isn't up and running yet, but we've been able to send samples over to the Prudhoe Bay lab for analysis. Everything's coming back looking really good. And we're sharing those reports with George and Elena as we get them. We're going to go to kind of a 2-sample-per-week cadence on that until we have our own gas chromatograph on site up and running. But, you know, with this data and the runs we had last month, we've got a lot of confidence that the facility can deliver on IGU's requirements and the schedule that you guys have shared with us for this year zero or the upcoming months through the end of June. So, you know, everything looking good on that front. Another big shout out to the IGU team. So we've been having kind of daily morning meetings with Elena and George and Roger to make sure we coordinate everything on the trailers and have any, you know, odds and ends issues that we all need to be on the same page on run down. That's been working really well. Really helped us all kind of stay in sync as we transitioned into steady state operations here. So through November, we were delivering roughly 2 to 3 trailers a day. I think at the time of this PowerPoint, we were around 400,000 gallons. We're currently at just about 650,000 gallons delivered so far through yesterday. That equates to about 2.3 million pounds of LNG headed down the road. So for Roger and his trucking guys, we'd love to see it. That will ramp up here in December to between 4 and 5 trucks a day, depending on the day, to meet the schedule you all provided. So far, you know, those coordination meetings and everything have been really helpful for getting that all done. You know, with this confidence and the way the facility's been running, we were confident enough to declare our commencement date for December 1st. So we worked with Elena and the team last week to get that notification out and get all the kind of scheduling nominations processes at least started. We'll keep working on those to get them smoothed out as we move along. The last couple milestones here that are coming up, we've got Cosmodyne, kind of our main vendor, coming up to do their do some surge testing on the nitrogen compressor, make sure everything is running smooth on the LNG cold box side, and then execute their kind of final performance test where they're hands off after that point, and it's all on us. So with that, I'll hand it over to Chris, and he'll talk you through a little bit of how we're transitioning over to steady state operations here.
Yeah, thanks, Clay. As stated in our commissioning wrap-up, I just wanted to kind of show our different operational milestones through commissioning startup. We obviously have a 4304 valve there that's been running for a while. Gotten through that. I picked the ops team here. Honing in on efficiencies with the funds. So a big part of what we're trying to do is get into the next step of what we call ops discipline, refinement of our procedures and process safety information, and work on day-to-day documentation. It's probably where we're looking for regular facilities, so making sure we have all of our records on file and have the training work that we need to do. And then a big piece of that might be the day-to-day compliance. We did have a special permit in order to not have to fence the whole pad that we're operating on. So we have to keep straight records of how we're maintaining security for that. So that's what you see the picture of down here. And then all that feeds into preparation drive, which we know is very few things are regulated facilities, just like secondary to pump station one. So we'll get a lot of focused attention for what we're doing there is manufacturing LNG and getting ship numbers. That's kind of buttoning up where we have been, what we're bridging towards and from the source. Next slide, please.
Okay, any questions?
So a big piece of that development of our operating plan, building up our capability with our team. It's probably not a 4304 valve we have over the last few weeks. Making sure we have the critical spares we need on the shelf. Examples like this and other critical rotating equipment spares. They'll feed into building our own shutdown schedule. These are the kind of foundational elements of a gateway to reliability for producing LNG and getting to that 2 turbines. In that, we want to optimize our production, being really switching from reactive and up in the construction commission to being proactive in a day to day operation. Weekly schedules, monthly schedules, volume commitments that we have well mapped out with our team members are finally fully understanding that for all the technical challenges as we go to start producing the market. Sharing that with the teams, as Clay stated, we've got a great relationship with the Gilbert Metal for daily discussions on what we think we're going to use for trailers, what the timing looks like, and we constantly been refining that. It's been very smooth here over the last week or so. But it's been out for about 2.5-3 weeks. So great cooperation. It's going well. As we learned from what the IGU team has done in the past, and this we look at the type and font as well, operations helping us in this situation. So, that's pretty much it from the operations standpoint.
All right. Thanks, Chris. And then the last slide we have in here is just kind of a view of the forecast that we have going forward through the year. So, this is really the forecast that you all have provided for kind of year zero or the beginning of our contract term here. You can see kind of the bouncing around of production during commissioning when we were doing batch runs and that sort of thing. You'll expect to see this still bounce around a little bit on a daily basis, but in general, you know, going forward, we'll be looking to hit that red line that is your forecast going into next year. So kind of the back half of the fiscal year for you guys. It looks like by the end of that fiscal year, we should be looking at somewhere just north of 10.4 million gallons total. So pretty exciting stuff here. With that, you know, we'll take any questions that y'all have, but we're excited to see the plant up and running and all this activity paying off here.
Okay, thanks, Clay. Gary has a question.
Back to slide 4, if we could, please. So I know what a truck is, but what are the two pieces on the top components?
So that's our 4304 And so we just wanted to show it as an example of some of the spare parts that we need. That little white ring you see over there is the Teflon seal that was not sealing correctly. And when we started up having LNG bubbling out of that. As Clay said last month, we had talked about the perlite removal and modification for the box. That's what these pictures are. And just use them as an example of spare parts and maintenance discipline and trying to get better at it as we learn from the problems that happen in commissioning.
Well, that's fascinating. So that Teflon ring is, what do you think that's worth at Ace Hardware? $20?
I'd say more than Ace Hardware, but pretty expensive when we look at it relatively to first production and all the manpower it took to find that little needle and just that.
Yeah.
That's what we're hoping is predicted for that, but basic things like this, and we're going to say, hey, I wouldn't hurt that few of these on the shelves. During different temperature variations, this valve has been problematic
on
working with the vendor.
Yeah. It doesn't help that when it originally came to us, it was on the inside of the cold box instead of where we can access it from the outside of the cold box. So with that bit of work behind us, any time we need to work on this thing, it's much smoother than it had been. So
have we had experience yet on the road to validate the $500,000 we spent on the axle reconfiguration? Is it working right on our newly modified trailers?
That'd be Roger.
Pardon me?
That'd be Roger.
I think that's
Roger. Okay. Yeah. Well, we'll put that off for another time. Thank you.
Yeah, put that one for Roger.
Yep, thank you.
Okay. All reports are good that we've heard from the road, so.
Good. Thank you.
So, any other questions? So, I have one. What kind of issues did you find when you ran this up to full power?
So there's been some challenges on getting the nitrogen compressor to run up to max power. That's part of what this surge test coming up will be. We're able to deliver more than enough LNG that for what we need in the foreseeable future, but getting that last bit of performance out, hopefully this surge test coming up in the next few days and then the performance test earlier, first half of December here, will get us all the way up top. So
okay,
that's been the main one. Chris, any other ones that you can think of?
Well, we do have Cosmic Dine, the vendor for the performance test arriving tomorrow, and we're going to make some adjustments on that surge curve like Clay was talking about, and that battle kind of unleashed a little bit more performance as we put their kids to the test here over the next week to 10 days.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, thanks, guys. Good job.
All right. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That gets us to Ruba here. Let me start our borough presentation on the new transit building.
Wonderful. Well, thank you very much. My name is Steve Agenda. I'm the chief of staff of the Central Borough. A lot of familiar names and faces here, but nice to see you all here. In this study. Before I start, one just a quick plug. Elena, Eric, everyone at IG, all the staff have always been fantastic to work with. So great to get a lot of stuff done. Okay, so I have a quick presentation about our new transportation building at Tesoro Avenue and a little bit about the CMG fueling system that we have there. Disclaimer, I am not an engineer, so if you have engineering questions, I'll write them down and I'll try to get an answer right now. But before we get started on the building, one just a quick refresher about our transportation team here and our max fleet. We've got 3 CNG buses right now. Most of our fleet is still diesel buses, very old ones. They're well past their useful life. We've got 12 of those. We also have 2 diesel vans. We have purchased and are expecting 5 more CNG buses next year, probably in the fall. And I just in between sending this presentation in and today, heard that we were awarded our low and no emissions grant from the FTA to purchase 3 to 5 more CNG buses the year after that. In FY 2023-24, we transported over 270,000 passengers and drove over 500,000 revenue miles. Just a quick map of the different routes that we have. If you go to the next slide here. So, has everybody here seen a CNG bus on the road by now? We have them kind of going off different routes. If you haven't, this is kind of what it looks like. So, the actual natural gas is at the it's in a tank at the top of the bus, which is why that looks right there. Yep. Again, we have 3 of them. We got them last year. It's been a bit of a challenge, but we'll get into that kind of going through there. Overall, a success, but we're figuring out some kinks. Next slide, please. So depending on who you ask, this project has really been started about a decade ago, but the actual construction process started here in 2022. A little bit of a timeline. Tesoro Avenue, it's a little bit off the Mitchell. You can see it on the map there. And we went to substantial completion in February of 2025. And our warranty ends in just a few months. And we're hoping to get a couple more things done before that. So here again is a drone view of the facility. The whole parcel, it's just under 9 acres. The building's 51,000 square feet. If we go to the next slide, we'll get kind of an aerial view of the facility and the fueling infrastructure in the back. If we can go one more slide, that will give us a quick overview of where and how the bus is refueled. So we've got, it's almost like a gas station setup where you can drive a bus up to one of these stations and our servicers go ahead and fill those buses up. One more slide. And one more after that. So this is kind of the first of its kind CNG system in Alaska. So we've dealt with a couple of challenges with that. We've had to engineer some of the buildings where we house this infrastructure so that they're both not too warm or too cold, so they have both heat and air conditioning. We have a lot of people that are new to this technology on the project, but we found that their skills have really transferred really well. The system is operational as it is, but we have a couple warranty items that we're still working through. Another challenge is, I know that we were talking with IDU about what to do with our old transportation facility on Pager Road. We're still actually using that facility, so we are using it to fuel the rest of our fleets, and we're also using it for storage of other buildings. So I think when this facility, the new one, was envisioned, we were a little further along the process. Most of our fleet was natural gas, and we don't actually have a diesel pump on the facility. So most of our fleet right now, at least for the next year, are still going to the Peg Road facility to fill back up for gas. And that's pretty much what I've got for a quick overview. Does anybody have any questions? There are a few photos that made its way to you guys, I think, a little bit late, of the actual infrastructure. Maybe we could go through those pretty quickly. This is a quick view of the panel there. If you keep going. That's what the actual infrastructure looks like. Again, a lot like the gas station. Has anybody here had a chance to go out and take a tour or see it yet? Okay. Well, if anyone's interested, we could definitely set something up. This is inside one of the little sheds that, if you go to the next photo, you'll see outside of. Again, we have to heat and cool these just to make sure they're ready in the facility. And that's the back of the facility. Does anybody have any questions? Yeah.
So how long does it take you to fuel a bus?
It's a good question. It takes, I think it's about 5 minutes. There's a good amount of transfer in there.
Thank you. Can we look at the picture of the bus again?
Yeah.
So the one in the beginning. So what's happening at the rear end? Are there windows that we just can't see, or?
Yeah, the windows there sort of tinted there, and it looks especially, I think, they look especially tinted in the photo. I think in real life they're a little less so. But yeah, there's windows all the way up until that little colorful section of the area.
Yes, okay. I see. So there is passengers all the way close to the end of the bus.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, of course.
So, how many gallons of diesel fuel does a typical bus use in a year?
Oh, that's a really good question. I don't know the answer off the top of my head, but I can get it to you.
Okay, just curious. Okay.
Yeah.
Are there other cities, locales that, are there other cities or locales that use this bus in Arctic climes?
I think we're the only ones in Alaska that use a bus like this, the CNG. I think there are, when we were looking at ordering these, again, this off the ground at first, I think we looked at Michigan, maybe, for example. I do have some good news in that Fast Planning essentially just has put $1.7 million of funding to the university to have install a backup CNG filing filling station on campus. So I think we are currently the furthest north. We might be for another few more years, but then we'll have a backup, which is fantastic. Because right now, when ordering these buses, we had to have them put a little bit more CNG in the tank so that we can make sure that they were ready for testing up here before they click on the same.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Since you're going to run down the diesel fuel, would you mind checking for us and seeing what your buses consume using both diesel and natural gas?
Yes, yeah, of course. Yeah,
thank you.
So, not that this isn't your area, but maybe, but what does Anchorage use for their buses?
That's a good question. I think they have a mix of electric, maybe even, and diesel, but I'm not sure. I don't think they use natural gas.
Okay. I can look that up too. I'm curious.
Yeah.
Okay. Any other questions for Cuba? Okay. I'm going to go. Ride one of these buses one of these days now that I'm old enough to get it for free.
Oh, yeah. And yeah, if anybody wants a tour of either the buses or the facility, let the facility do that.
Okay. Cool. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Let's see. Let's do operations report.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. George is not here. He has provided his written operations report. I am happy to answer any questions on it. Since he provided the operations report, one rather exciting for us thing happened. You might remember that not this past summer, but the summer before that, we have had 4 PHMSA audits. Up to this point, we've received conclusions of 2 of those, which were there were no NOPVs created as a result of that. And we just got word back that they are closing the Titan audit without issuing any action of correction. Thank you, Kuba. Which I don't know when the last time any of you went to Titan, but that was very, very exciting for us. It's a very old facility that the team has worked hard to keep it compliant, and kudos to George for being able to go, and to Jim at the plant for being able to go through that audit without issues. And so now we only have one that has not yet concluded, which is our control room.
And that's close, though, isn't it?
We don't know. They tell us when they come, and they tell us the results of their audits when they do.
We have some mitigation stuff like the tower out here and the communication system to back up the control room. That's all linked to that same.
Right. We did that to be compliant. We did not do that specifically as a result of the audit. We did that as a result of the code saying that we have to.
Okay. Any questions for George through Elena?
I thought that on December 1st we couldn't source our gas from. Oh, I'm sorry. That we couldn't source our gas from any place else than the North Slope. Is that?
That is correct. When we signed our contract with HealthCorp on the North Slope, we also signed we signed an amendment to our Cook Inlet contract. That amendment first said that we essentially give away our right for the renewal. So the contract that we signed with HealthCorp in 2021 said that it's a 5-year contract with 1 5-year renewal at the at IGU's option only. So immediately when we signed the contract with the North Slope, we gave away the right to renew that 5-year contract. And then the second clause in there was that upon when Harvest declares commencement date, HealthCorp and IGU relieve each other of obligations under the Cook Inlet contract. So for all intents and purposes, the moment Harvest declared commencement date, we no longer have gas supply at Titan. We did later sign a contract with HealthCorp that allows us to source just enough gas from them to keep Titan in warm status, so not any liquefaction gas, but gas to keep buildings warm and heaters on specific pieces of equipment that should not freeze. And then the other piece of the of our contract with Harvest this time says that we will not source LNG from any other sources once they declare commencement date, with the only exception being if Harvest is unable for whatever reason to provide us with sufficient LNG to meet our needs. And so CryoPeak is no longer delivering as of last week.
I'm confused because I think it was at the finance meeting. It was pretty clear that someone said we can't get any more gas out of Titan, nor can we get any more from Canada.
That is correct.
Okay, but we're operating at full production?
It was last month.
Yeah, but what are we doing with that? I mean, December 1st came.
Right, this is November's report.
Yes, got that.
So December 1st came, Titan is in warm status. We've closed Titan. We are no longer producing at Titan.
Oh, okay. Then I misread that. So okay.
Well, no, it says that, but it's also last month's report. It's looking back.
Currently at full capacity up to the point where you didn't need it anymore. And then you just let it down. Okay, I understand now. That's what was said at the finance meeting. So thank you.
Sure.
Okay. Any more questions? Hearing none, we'll go to the Finance Committee report. Jack.
Okay, so we're starting on page 22. Just a couple things of interest in the financial summary. I want to talk a little bit about the $513,000 shortfall in cash driven by higher transportation payments to Middle Fork that will be offset by credit in the future. I'll let Elena explain that.
Sure. So when we signed our contract with Middle Fork, though there is no contractual obligation of providing them any certain number of loads, there was the conversation that they were going to start trucking for us from the North Slope starting January 1 of 2025. When we have experienced delays into moving to the North Slope in an effort to ensure that our contractors continue being strong and having a good business, we made the decision and at the time informed the board that we're going to start paying them North Slope prices for cook and lit route deliveries up until the point when we transition to the North Slope, at which point they're going to we're going to reverse, right? They're going to give us North Slope deliveries for cook and lit prices until the credit is paid for. The effect that this has on our finances is, one, the shortfall in cash, and two, the increased dollar amount in our inventory that is not matched by the increase in actual LNG inventory volumes.
And so what is our credit at right now?
$1.89 million.
And how much are we saving from each truckload that comes from the North Slope?
$4,600.
Okay, great.
I'm glad I can provide you all the numbers.
So is it going to be paid back fully in this this year?
That was part of the agreement we had, so that it didn't mess with the
at the year end, it's going to be net zero.
It correct. Will
be. Okay.
Well, it's going to be the other way around, right? It's going to be positive because in the budget, the harvest transition happened on October 1. In reality, it's December 1, and so we have two extra months of cheaper transportation.
A lot of moving parts there, but I think I got it.
Okay, then the next thing, and the next paragraph talks about operating MUs being below budget, driven by lower demand, and by the lower demand for stuff other than heating and stuff like that, and then fewer heating degree days. And actually, the lower demand is 8.5%, and the heating degree days are 2.3% down. So heating degree days are 2.3% less than predicted. This other demand is 8.5%. And what Zach is going to do is start, you know, getting a little closer idea exactly what that lower demand is about. And when we go into the next budget year, try to get a handle on what that's going to be. And then under grant income, they say that indicating the $299,000 over budget for the month due to timing differences, but remains $443,000 under budget. But everything that was still, even though everything budgeted was accomplished, and so they were just that much more efficient in doing their work. And I don't know if you had some third party as part of the budget. It was all in-house services, and so they did everything they were supposed to do and saved a bunch of money while they were doing it. So that's great news. I think the next thing to talk about is the dashboard, which is on page 30. Couple things worth pointing out there is that we're continuing to, our cost for MCF is continuing to be less than budget. And one other thing is that the budgeted levels for LNG in the big tank are about $220,000 under budget, primarily because we were counting on gas from the North Slope when the budget was done, and so Titan wasn't able to keep up with the demand, basically, and so we dropped money, or we. Actually, the amount in they're able to keep up with demand. They just weren't able to produce the excess that we wanted to. So. And then EBITDA went from red to green, and I'll let Zach give us insight on that.
Not a whole lot to really talk about. Just our operating expenses are lower than what we budgeted. Some of it is due to timing differences. I will say we are making sure we are watching our operating expenses going out. Budget is always tight, trying to ensure that we're spending appropriately and responsibly. So not a whole lot to really speak to that other than they're down. It is due to timing differences. The gas liquefaction, all it is in the red, that should trend more towards the green as the year goes on. And then we'll also start seeing trailer maintenance catch back up as we go to the North Slope. So some of those items that are in green right now will start trending up to more to the red. The 32% trailer maintenance will go up. So with that being said, operating expenses are coming in right where they need to be, especially given we have a little bit lower revenue than what we were budgeting. But all in all, for the month of October, we're actually looking pretty good.
And then on the next page, I just want to point out that that the projected end of year cost for MCF are projected to be less than the budget right now. Let's see. I'm going to talk about the next page. And so this is what Zach and I have been working on for the last few months and trying to get some sense of the cost of doing business and the revenue. And it shows that our total operating expenses have increased 23.8%, whereas the total cost of goods sold is 61.8%. So it does show that operating expenses have escalated far less than the amount of gas and stuff like that that we're using.
Jack, would you? I know you've been working on this. Would you walk us through what you just said and?
Okay, so
my numbers are.
So, I just the whole what I was after when asking for this is how are we doing on our, I'm going to call it fixed costs, those things that, you know, cost us, like engineering and admin and stuff like that, compared to the cost of the cost of gas as it goes up and and trucking expenses and so on and so forth. And so it does show that the cost of natural gas purchases, trucking expenses, electricity, and the cost of system gas, or what is called collectively cost of goods sold, has risen 61.8% since 2023, whereas the total operating expenses, more along what the fixed costs are going to be, have only escalated 23.8%.
Oh,
and
I see. Okay.
And even better, if you take a look at it on an MCF basis, you can see that the total operating expenses has increased only 1%, or 6 cents out of $6, only 1% in that period of time for MCF.
Where does it show that?
On the second set of charts. See the very bottom line, total operating expense.
Mm-hmm.
In 2023, the total operating expense per MCF was $6.34. And then in 2026, it's $6.40,
mm-hmm.
or an increase of 6 cents, or about 1%, basically, in that period of time.
And that is total operating expense.
Right. Okay. And you can see that if we indeed meet our projections for 2026, the costs of engineering and administration and customer service costs have actually decreased in that period of time. That's what the red shows.
Mm-hmm. That is a good report you guys have been working on. Okay. Thank you.
Just for clarification, engineering has gone up, not down. I think you're looking at the Talkeetna maintenance, which...
I see. You're right. You're right. So, yeah.
That would be once you get it tweaked, that would be a really good one to put on a graph, wouldn't it? Would you be able
we did have graphs before. We had graphs of them before. Of course, they weren't, they reflected what the chart said, but they mm-hmm. the charts weren't saying the right thing. We could do it.
I'll leave that up to you guys.
Okay.
Thank you.
And on the next page, nothing's really totally changed from that. That just shows you that right now our inventory has been below our budget for quite a while, primarily because of the delay in getting gas from the slope, but it's going to turn around here since we're going to be starting to get more gas. And the green line is a 30-day.
20.
20-day?
20 mm-hmm.
And the red line is a 5-day?
Mm-hmm.
So we're well above both of those. That's all I got.
Okay. Any questions for Jack? Is this graph we just talked about, mm-hmm. does that incorporate the new schedule that we just heard from Harvest?
Yes.
Sure.
It does. And for clarity, the schedule you just saw from Harvest is an IGU-directed schedule. Based on our cash, based on our budget, based on optimizing trucking and trailers, we can change it. So essentially, the schedule says we're going to get 57,000 gallons a day until we get into the winter holidays. Then we're going to knock it down just a little bit by half a trailer a day to allow Roger and his crew some time off for certain drivers. So we're going to go to 50,000 gallons per day. Then we're going to increase to 75,000 gallons per day, and we're going to stay there till March 1st, knock it down to 50,000 gallons, take the whole month of May off, because breakup season is the worst time, and because operationally it would be very nice to draw the tank down as much as we can because of some maintenance requirements that we have, and then turn back on for 2 weeks in June with the sole purpose of ensuring that we satisfy minimum volume commitment, and that will end our fiscal year.
So how is the minimum volume commitment figured for a partial year?
We, in our contract, we have what's called Schedule B2, and it signifies year zero. This is contract. This is considered contract year zero. It has it broken down per month. And technically, if we were to go by the letter of the contract, we would have minimum volume commitment that we have to satisfy every month, as opposed to what is in a typical year, which is a cumulative minimum volume commitment. We were able to negotiate that with Harvest, the fact that that there was a monthly minimum volume commitment that was larger in the winter months and smaller in the summer months really didn't make any sense for either parties. They would have to turn off and down all the time, and we would have to be on the road, for example, in May when we really don't want to be on the road. So we, in the letter that we signed that defined what happens with pre-commencement date volumes, we also negotiated that that year zero volumes are going to be an aggregate as opposed to a monthly commitment. The contract dictates that.
An aggregate of the months left in the
correct.
Year. Thank you.
Okay. Any more questions? Hearing none, we'll move on to new business. All right, the report calendar is on page 35. Any comments on the calendar? And the general rule is we miss holidays, shift for holidays.
If I may, Mr. Chair, the one thing to point attention to that's out of sync is the January 13 board meeting as opposed to what would typically be a January 6. We briefly discussed that. Thank you for the board for accommodating. This is me personally going on PPO and changing this date. Other than that, is what you would typically expect. There is no specific board action that we usually take to adopt this calendar, but it's here for discussion in case we need to adjust anything.
They can go through and put it on your calendar now for next year. Okay. Cool. Jack?
Erica puts it on our calendar.
I put it on my calendar at home.
Nobody messes with Steve's calendar. He puts his own stuff on.
I'm expecting Erica to put on my calendar.
She will.
Go take care of Jack.
And then on the following page is a static calendar. I will just point out two things that are different from last year's static calendar. One is we've removed the harvest reports. I think that there is no longer a contractual obligation for them to provide any reports past commencement date. I'm sure they'll continue providing them if we request them. But we took them off. And then the second bullet there is just a good reminder. Director Wilbur has had to remind us and keep insisting on it because we didn't know that was a thing. So we added the board conflict of interest disclosure statement just so that we can, as staff, remember to give you one to sign in January. But that's the only differences between this and what you saw last year.
Okay. Moving on to IGU legislative priority update. Page 38, the list of priorities.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yuri was unfortunately unable to join us for this meeting. He did see these priorities. I wrote them and I'm proposing them to you for approval. To start, I'll say that these are not in any particular order by importance or otherwise. And there's not a lot, there isn't anything really that is new as compared to our last set of priorities. I added a qualifying statement at the beginning, and then I have the rest of the priorities. I'll just briefly go through them. I suggest that we ask the state to support measures to lower the cost of conversion. I guess the second one is a little bit a newer written out statement, though we've always supported that. I just said support alignment between state air quality objectives and heating choices by prioritizing the transition of state-owned facilities in Fairbanks and in North Pole from diesel to natural gas service. Right, if air quality is important, then state facilities should consider choosing the least polluting method of heating that they can. Supporting capital funding for natural gas mainline extensions and services is added to this. The current grant that we're working under, the Alaska Legislative Grant, does not allow spending for service lines, and I have added that because IGU heavily subsidizes the cost of service lines, and without the source of funding, these are going to become expensive to subsidize. Relative to the Alaska LNG project, support an in-state demand pooling approach that ensures interior communities are part of the statewide customer base. And it's important to point out that this approach would not, if the Wood Mackenzie projection of 11 BCF in demand in Fairbanks actually comes true, this approach does not increase the cost of natural gas in Anchorage to subsidize Fairbanks in any matter. If we actually provide 11 BCF to the in-state demand, we provide more of a benefit than we provide the cost by the fact that we're going to have a spur line. And lastly, increased Dalton Highway maintenance and staffing, because now we're on the Dalton Highway, and the fact that it is not well maintained is going to start impacting us in terms of ability to lift in accordance with our contract on the North Slope. And with that, Mr. Chairman, unless there's any discussion, I recommend that the board approves these priorities as presented.
A motion to approve or discuss?
Mr. Chair, I would move that we approve the 2026 IGU legislative priorities as presented.
Thank you. Second?
Second.
Okay, discussion. Gary.
I was really dismayed this morning when I read the paper and the assembly and someone, I forget who they met, anyhow, it was a broad sweeping article on the consideration of the assembly and, help me, who was there also, Lena, who was, do you remember who was participating? It was the assembly and...
Your
delegation. Thank you. Your delegation. I was dismayed, and my dismay continues to at this point, that we seem to be taking the idea of the spur line and not putting the import in that indeed it deserves. Nowhere in that article today was there any discussion, any even a glancing discussion of the need for a spur line, one, to make the big pipe, if it ever would happen, viable, and the other, to service interior Alaska. So, relative to this, I'll be voting no on this because item number four is where we should be, for the want of a better word, pounding the table for a spur line and bringing it front and center in our request for legislative priorities. Getting into the politics of this, it's going to take 9 people from Interior Alaska to do anything to stymie or to promote and move a spur line. So I don't think we appreciate what we're asking our legislative, our interior delegation to do, even if they were all in, if they were all in sync and all bought in to demanding a spur line. So that said, I would like to see bullet number 4 either be strengthened, or a bullet number 5 that says that the Interior Gas Utility legislative priority is to promote, obtain, whatever the word one might want to use, not the ability, I want to use the word demand, but we don't want to use the word demand. So demands a consideration, approval, whatever it might be for a spur line to the interior. That could just be one sentence as far as I'm concerned. So I would leave that up to the board how they want to emphasize what I consider to be probably the most important thing on that whole page.
You want the, if I understand, I didn't understand what you said, but if I understand what you want the spur line to be paid for in the total pipeline package.
No, I didn't say anything about who's going to pay for it, because other people will figure that out, and as we've talked about, whether it's a postage stamp rate or it's a grant, I don't want to talk about that. I want to talk about the fact that our interior delegation needs to be in lockstep to demand a spur line be part of the big pipe, should it ever happen. That, because this is addressed to those 9 legislators. And they need to sign on, and fortunately, we have a governor's election. It's going to draw out 50 people, and 7 of them are from Interior Alaska, and we need to get them on record that they support a spur line, and however you want to word it, that should be us standing on the mountain screaming that we want a spur line for Interior Alaska, and it doesn't say that there.
Well, Gary, I guess as this has progressed forward, we are looking at a spur line. The issue has been, is it going to be paid for in the big package, or is it going to be paid for on the back of Fairbanks?
Yeah.
I think our community's position, kind of talked about, is that we want it to be paid for in the big package. You know, whoever pays for the big package, whether it's a private, whether it's federal government, whether it's state government, we want it to be paid for as it is one project.
That's what the pooling effectively does. Well,
yeah. But
if you allow that wiggle room in a statement as strong as this statement should be, you allow those decision makers to go down to rabbit holes and find a place to hide. We don't want to talk about funding, how it's going to be funded. We just want to know that it's going to be there when we turn the valve, the gas. That's all. Let somebody else figure it out.
So basically, what you're saying is you want to ensure that the tap is part of the main line.
Yeah, I want it on a spur line to our customers,
yeah.
Our IGU customers.
Yeah, that way, if the mainline doesn't get built, you know, the spur line, it doesn't matter then anyhow. Yeah, but if it does get built, we want to make sure that it's part of that.
Sure. Steve, the way that I thought we were concerned about the Doyon deal with AGDC was that it was going to be part of a tariff, that the cost of the line was going to be part of a tariff that was attached onto the price of gas that reached the city limits or the Fairbanks community.
Pancaking, yeah. As opposed to pooling, yeah.
So, you know, Gary, for the life of me, I just can't. I hear you, but I don't understand why you would want to just leave it out there without defining who you want to pay for it.
Again, that gives people a lot of places that they can hide to make a decision. And our nine people and the governor that we're hopefully will support this, we need to be front and center and blunt about the fact that we want a spur line.
I think Gary was open to adding another bullet. So that one, the pooling bullet will stand on its own, and then the next bullet will be make sure it's part of the construction, I think. So,
just to follow up a little bit on Gary's comment, because this is a letter that we are writing to our nine members of the Acadia delegation, and if I correctly said, you, this is our voice saying to our nine members, hey guys, we want to see a spur line. We want you fighting for a spur line. Now, whether they do or not, who knows? But it's our saying, we want you to fight for this for Fairbanks. And I do see where Harry is going with that. And I think that is an amendment that I could support. Because it's our letter to our nine legislators. Guys, get your act together and fight for the spur line for the interior. Now, whether they can get it or not, who knows? But it's our sentiment to our nine, get your act together and fight for it.
And to piggyback on what Mike just said, this is the governor's election.
Yeah.
This document goes to the governor, and 13 or however many candidates we happen to have, could be 20 by the time this is over, each of them get to answer the question, do you support a spur line to Interior Alaska as it's listed on our priorities? That's what we are asking. Do you support it? And there'll be all sorts of wiggles, but at the end of the day, they're going to have to come down to be supportive of a spur line one way or the other. It's a political issue.
So Elaine has been writing rapidly over here, and so do you have a proposed statement that we can maybe talk about as an amendment? You can't make the amendment, but...
Sure. What I would suggest follows the discussion that I've heard. Would be relative to the Alaska LNG project, rather than a comma, put a colon there and put 2 points. One, ensure the project includes a dedicated spur line to Fairbanks. Two, support an in-state gas demand pooling approach that ensures interior communities are part of the statewide customer base.
Okay, can we take the first part and make it its own bullet? And sure. Put it right at the top.
Sure. Whatever the board wants.
If that's what you'd like, make an amendment.
So moved if it works.
Okay.
I can't repeat the language, but
can you repeat
I would it? Move that bullet number one be a strong statement of the need for a spur line, and however your language builds that up.
Read that standalone.
Relative to the Alaska LNG project, ensure it includes a dedicated spur line to Fairbanks.
Ensure the Alaska LNG project includes
includes a dedicated spur line to the interior.
Yes.
And is there a place there? I think there is, as you read it. There's a word for demand. Say the first few words of your statement.
Relative to the Alaska LNG project, ensure it includes a dedicated
demand,
spur line.
Strike to ensure and add demands.
You just said a few minutes ago.
Yeah, but now I'm...
So here's an idea. Interior legislative support for in-state gas pipeline is contingent upon building plan.
Let's say requires.
Required, okay. Yes, okay.
Yeah. It's not in your face one, but it's got to be part of it.
So IGU requires a dedicated spur line to the interior.
What you say, the interior delegation requires, not the IGU.
The interior, but that's our, sorry, I'm losing you because that's our priorities.
Right.
give it to us again, Elena.
Can I pause this? Can this maybe be included in an executive session?
Zane?
We can't make a motion in an executive session. We can talk about it.
Say that again?
Can we take this conversation to executive session?
On what theory?
We don't want to talk about it right now.
What's theory?
This topic, you mean our position on legislative priorities about the LNG or the gas pipeline?
Yes.
Boy, I'm having a hard time. I guess I can't envision what everybody might want to say under that rubric, but generally I don't think it fits under anything. Something a little narrower than that might give us some basis. But just on the general topic, I'm not seeing it.
Doesn't this? Oh, I'm sorry, Jim. Go ahead.
Well, I just had a question for Pete. Is there something you don't want to say at the board meeting that you want to say in executive session?
Not necessarily, other than we're starting to throw around words like demand and like that. I mean, it just doesn't seem appropriate. I think we should strategize more carefully before we go through this. We have another session before the legislative session.
Well, we could put it in there, we respectively demand.
Scratch that, Zach.
So, Zane, isn't this part of our strategy to move a gas line and a spur line? Doesn't this fall under strategy?
We have a strategy relative to the LNG line. I'm just trying to understand how we express our legislative priority about that is, you know, we somehow impair our finances in some way. Maybe I'm not understanding what people intend to talk about. That may be where I'm missing the boat here, but...
Mr. Chair, is it appropriate to just put this off till the next session?
If that's what somebody wants to do.
I move that we
Is that a motion? Postpone discussion on this until next board meeting.
Motion to postpone?
Yes.
Okay. Is there a second?
Second.
Any objection?
Could I ask, do we know your schedule?
I don't know.
Not yet.
His availability for next. I can ask him.
Well, not that he needs to be here in person, but I'm just wondering if there are meetings with legislators and groups, if we're putting off, if we're letting the perfect soil possible here. Because if we don't have a statement, there's nothing he can waive showing that we are that we are respectfully demanding a spur line.
We have a motion on the floor to postpone. So I don't think it's debatable, is it? I don't think so.
You can. It's not.
Is that the motion you made?
I can't make a motion.
I didn't. Is that the wording you read? The motion that was made, is it from the wording that you read?
No, the motion on the table is to postpone.
Oh.
Yeah.
And what is postponing?
To the next meeting.
Okay, so
it still gives us about 20
So that's days. A month from now. Legislature is just getting back in session.
It's actually a couple weeks before legislature gets back in session. I don't know what the date is, but I think the earliest I ever saw was the 15th.
Do you think that would diminish our request by waiving the month?
I don't think it would have any impact at all. It might miss a headline or something like that, but that's okay. They aren't going to decide something like this at the end of the session anyway.
Does this request... excuse me, Jack's had a finger up
there. Go ahead, Jack.
So I don't know why we're postponing. So I'm going to read something that I wrote down. And it's along the lines as here. It says, support construction of a spur line to Fairbanks as part of the AK LNG project. Now, to me, the only thing we're debating is, do we put something in there besides the word support? And I don't know what we could do but ask the legislature to support it. We can't demand that they do something. You know, we can only ask them to support that thing. And how well a job to do it is up to us to pester them about it. So, anyway, that's my thought on postponement.
Okay, I'm gonna take the motion to postpone off the table. Is that okay? Okay. So we're going back on.
Is it off the table?
It's off the table for that. With the, I think nodded in the second. I think okay. Okay, it's on. We could vote it down, but it's easier at this point.
So I'll make the amendment then. I mean, I'll make the motion for the amendment.
You have the floor.
Okay. So we add the following bullet. Support construction of a spur line to Fairbanks as part of the AK LNG project.
And that would be the first bullet.
I don't care where it goes. I'm not going to say where it goes. The first bullet can be fine. First bullet. This would be the first bullet. I propose that be the first bullet.
As an amendment.
As an amendment.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. Now, any discussion?
Bullets. So when we look at this here, I'm envisioning that becomes bullet number one.
That's what the amendment said.
What's that?
That's what we said.
Okay. Okay. So it's front and center. Okay. Does bullet number four then stay as it is?
Well, let's wait till we get done with this amendment.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Right?
Yeah, I'm fine.
Okay, once this amendment is done, then the whole thing opens back up for discussion.
Yeah.
The main motion.
Okay. You'll call the question? I think I have to call it an emotion like that. So.
Question.
I can call it. Eric, we didn't call the roll.
Director Miller?
Yes.
Director Wilbur?
Yes.
Director Kelly?
No.
Director Wilkin?
Yes.
Director Wall?
Yes.
Vice Chair Dotson?
Yes.
Chair Hagen?
Yes. Okay, we have the extra bullet. Now, back to the main motion.
Just like the old days.
10 minutes. Check.
So what control does the does our entire delegation have over pooling? How can they advance the pooling concept?
They have control over the RCA, and they can give direction to the RCA to say, this is how I want you to account for this project, to come up with a tariff cost.
Okay.
If I could, if they were so interested, they could have a hearing and get it front and center. They could hold the hearing to get it front and center, and that would move the issue one way or the other. There's ways to do it. When you say pooling, do you say postage stamp? Is that the same thing?
No.
It's not. Okay.
Well.
The result is postage stamp, right?
It's kind of, yeah. Okay. Jim.
I would suggest, because I'm kind of like Gary, I've heard pooling kicked around here, but I'm not quite sure what it means. I didn't realize that it meant that it all comes under one financial umbrella. Would it be possible for us to have, some kind of a presentation on pooling so that I could get it? I think it's so important that we ought to really understand it. And I guess just to kind of take this a couple steps farther, I think Pete's right. Us just saying, we want this isn't enough. I think we ought to be working to put together a group in Fairbanks, that is going to take this on as an issue and push it in the assembly, push it in the city council, push it at board meetings like this one, because this is too important to our community just to say, us to send in this thing to Uri, and I think a lot of respect for Uri, but he's been described as an information guy, and we really need to get some horsepower behind this. It's important. Anyway, that's my thought.
I think in response to that, I had a conversation with Elena recently, and it sounds like there is momentum towards what Jim is talking about. Is that not right?
I just had Erica, in expectation of this question, pull up the Fairbanks North Star Borough priorities. So if you'll indulge me, she'll put them on the screen. Day two, talk about a spur line. That is one of their legislative priorities. They give themselves a little bit more room in their legislative priorities to advocate for whatever it is that has the end result that we want, which is we pay the same amount as people who are further away than from the North Slope are. If you'll don't mind scrolling down to find the specific priority, keep going. Natural gas pipeline to Fairbanks. I'll just read it out loud. A natural gas pipeline of any diameter from the North Slope to South Central Alaska must include, either as part of its base design or as a fully funded addition after completion of the main line, a spur line to Fairbanks such that interior residents are not bypassed by the project. Rates from gas from the line should be postage stamp rates. That is the same price for all Alaskans served by the line, regardless of their location.
And that didn't make the paper, so anybody reading the paper didn't see that.
It like, might not be the fault of...
I'm really glad that that's there. That's, mm-hmm. And doesn't that piggyback on what you told me, that the mayor is very much dialed up on it? Okay.
Mayor Dreyer Hopkins says yes.
Okay. So that may be what you're talking about, Jim, is that the mayor may be doing exactly what you're talking about, putting a team, a tiger team, so to speak?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll tell him you volunteered.
You can tell him.
Okay. So we have the main motion with an amendment. Amended main motion. Any more discussion? You want to modify the fourth bullet or the fifth bullet now? I'll leave it alone.
So, you need a new motion stating as amended?
No. The amendment's passed. I just want to know if you want to modify the bullet number, new bullet number 5, which you want to say relative to what pool, that one.
Can you explain for me, Steve, because I know you know, the difference between what the borough just asked for, calling it postage stamp rate with the same rate being paid by all in-state users and pooling?
I can. Pooling is a mechanism to get you there, right? And, you know, I just heard about that wording just now, or this afternoon. And so postage stamp rate says that you're going to pay the same in Anchorage as you do in Fairfax. Pooling gets you the same place. But what if they came up and say, well, we're going to totally fund the tap so you can get there without having to pool, but you still get to the same place? There may be other ways to get to the same place that aren't pooling. I don't know what they would be. Right? Unless some billionaire just says, here's pay for the whole thing, we all just get it with the gas price at the slope. But, the pooling is a typical thing that electric utilities do. When they have different people owning different assets, and then day one they've been saying, we're not going to put these two things together. They're separate, you know, they're not financed the same. But what you do is you finance them separately, and you regulatorily put them together and do the math so you blur and get all the volume of the big pipe, and you spread that all the costs over that number.
Okay,
so that's kind of the logic. But it's a lot of sort of regulatory ninja move to make it cheaper for everybody. And actually, if Fairbanks comes into the next season, the number we have, it actually drops the Anchorage price, so that we've been hearing in the past, we're not going to subsidize Fairbanks just to get that. But actually, we bring their price down a little bit when they come to the table based on that old, all the news minor numbers. So pooling is a pretty popular concept in the business. So, any more discussion on the motion? Are we going to move the main motion as amended? Okay. Director, please call the roll.
Director Kelly?
Yes.
Director Wilkin?
Oh, yes.
Director Wall?
Yes.
Director Wilbert?
Yes.
Director Miller?
Yes.
Vice Chair
Dotson?
Yes.
Chair
Higginson? Yes.
Motion passes.
Motion passes. Okay. Next is audit, and it has asterisks, but I don't think that's not the consent agenda asterisks, I don't believe. So we still have an audit in front of us, or is there some kind of federal shutdown thing? I don't have approval from the feds, I guess, in the audit. I've never heard of that before, but apparently they were shut down and they couldn't give you the green light.
That's correct.
That.
Yep.
Not the best way to say it, but
it's close enough.
Okay. Concept is there.
Yes.
So it gets us down to the lobbyist contract approval. Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The reason this contract is in front of you is because selecting a lobbyist is excluded from our procurement manual rules and therefore is subject to board approval regardless of what amount it is for. I recommend that the board approves a two-year contract with Morgan Partnerships LLC. They have been our lobbyist for several years now, and they have been doing a good work for us. The compensation is increasing by $6,000 per year. Our previous contract was a five-year contract at $30,000, or a one-year contract with five one-year renewals at $30,000 per year. There is a clause for termination where either party might terminate with 30 days written notice. As part of your package, you see that what the contract lists for responsibilities on each party, and those are rather standard and the same as have been for the last 6 years. In regards to the lobbyist, we will have one other conversation in executive session about it, but the conversation we'll have in an executive session will not impact management recommendation on this item.
Okay. Motion to approve.
Motion.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, I would move that to authorize the general manager to execute the 2026-2027 contract for lobbying service between Interior Gas Utility and the Morgan Partnership LLC with the terms as substantially presented.
Second. Okay. Any discussion? Are you ready for the roll? No? Okay. Erica, would you please call the roll?
Director Wilbur?
Yes.
Director Miller?
Yes.
Director Kelly?
Yes.
Director Wall?
Yes.
Director Wilkins?
Yes.
Vice Chair Dodson?
Yes.
Chair Higginson?
Yes.
Motion passes.
Okay. That gets us down to other reports. General Manager report. Diane.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My report is provided as part of the packet. There isn't anything exciting to talk about. The biggest change here at IGU has been transitioning to the North Slope as a result of the commencement date for harvest. One of the negatives to talk about is that the number of customers that we have on the that have signed new service agreements has not changed from for next summer. Installation has not changed since last month. We're still at 33. We're increasing our efforts to try to add to that number. This is low even in comparison with last year. And unless there are any questions, we still have a big executive session ahead, so my report is provided. I'll take any questions.
Okay. Any questions for Elena? Seeing none? Okay. I'll go to the attorney's report. Elaine.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have nothing to add to my written report unless you have any questions. It's been pretty brief and not a whole lot going on outside, just the North Slope related issues.
Okay. Any comments? Any questions for Zane? Okay.
Well, I guess I do have a question.
Go ahead, Chris.
So Zane, to the extent that you can share with us, what is your commitment to IGU? As you wind things down.
So my commitment to IGU is I have no, it's indefinite at this point. I have committed that if we do, and get involved in litigation, I'm committed to seeing that through. I anticipate, maybe reevaluation of things, maybe a year down the road or so, there might be some change, but I have no plans of ending my relationship with IGU and any time that I'm, that I can give you a date or think of. I intend to be around for, a significant time in the future here.
Okay, thank you. So your commitment is measured not in quarter by quarter, but maybe year by year?
I think that's probably fair. Okay. Yeah, and I have committed to give, make sure that, you know, when I do step down or if IG wants me to step down, that we have plenty of time to make sure we have a transition that's effective and works for IGU.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Zen. Okay, any next topic is director request for IGU information. Hearing none, we'll move on to closing comments.
I never have closing comments, so please indulge me. I have several today. So first, Gary and Sue Wilkin are the 2025 Distinguished Citizens this year for Boy Scouts. Unfortunately, I will not be able to be there to celebrate. I'll be in Boston next week, but I think that speaks to both of your commitment to this community, and we thank you for everything that you have done.
Thank you. I'll send you a video.
Thank you.
Because I don't want you to miss anything I got to say.
I'm sure it'll be a thrilling. Not more thrilling than executive sessions with you, though, Gary. And then I want to acknowledge the fact that this is Mike's and Steve's last board meeting as board members. Mike has been on the board for as long as I have been working at IGU, and I've learned a lot from his quiet leadership. And I, no matter who fills that chair, it'll feel empty to me for a little bit once you move on to better things. And I sincerely appreciate having had the opportunity to work with you. And then Steve was the chairman of the board when I started working at IGU, and I will probably never forget the trauma that I have received. I was still working for Dan at the time, and Steve showed up to my office with one of the spreadsheets. And I was like, what is happening here? He left and I was looking around for assistance, and none came. And over time, it was a cool spreadsheet. Daryl, cool. Over time, I have learned to work with those spreadsheets, and I've gotten a lot of value. But I think the most value that I've received from Steve being on the board and then being the chair this last year is the fact that Steve has the experience being the head of a utility, and he has led the board and he has provided leadership for me from that lens. He always reminds me of things that are important that are outside of work, and when you're younger and have something to prove, sometimes you forget that you need to stop and go see family sometimes, and Steve has never let me forget that. It really does feel like the end of an era, and I have something very symbolic for you. Before I take this out, you should know that...
I should have waited for the video.
Hey, it's being recorded. This is not to scale for all of you engineers out there, but this is a 3D printed tank, and then two of the trailers, and it says IGU Founding Fathers. And this one is for you, and I have... one for you, Mike.
No, thank you. Nice.
Thank you.
Cool. Yeah, cool. 3D printed, did you say?
Yes. They're pretty cool.
You don't have a 3D printer, Gary?
No, but Christmas is coming.
That concludes my closing comments, Mr.
Chairman. Call Matt and tell him that's what you really need. Okay, thank you. Okay. Jim, closing comments.
You're done.
Time.
No, I'm good. Thank you.
Okay. I guess skip Zane too, but we'll get back to it. Jack.
Thank you, Steve, for leading this organization for such a long time. Really, really sorry to see you go. Same with you, Mike. Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure working with you.
Pleasure. Yeah.
Pete?
No comments.
Sherry, so I don't forget you.
Thank you. No comments. Really sad to see you and Mike go. Thank you for all that you've done for IGU.
Okay, thank you. Mike?
Thank you, Steve. I would just like to say that it's been a pleasure the last 6 years on the board, and I can honestly say that I've enjoyed working with the current and past administration, IGU, and the attorneys also. And I think that, you know, I've also enjoyed working with all the board members, past and present, that in my 6 years. And I think it's been an enjoyable experience for me, and I think we've moved the board along. And as I look at it, there will be hiccups as we move forward, but I think by and large the future is very bright for this utility. And I know some of you know who Bob Hope is. Some of you may not know who Bob Hope is, but to paraphrase the line, you know, thanks for the memories. So anyway, thank you so very much, and everybody at this table and everybody that has been at this table, thank you for, you know, I really appreciate it. Thanks.
Thanks. Great.
First, we should express our condolences to Jack, who lost his brother, Roy.
Oh, right. Cousin.
Cousin? I thought that was your brother.
No.
Oh,
Roy's
well.
My cousin.
Cousin Roy was a big part of Alaska, a big part of the history, and we mourn his passing. So first, Mike. Mike, of course, along with Pete, was my Senate president when I was at La La Land. And so I knew Mike's capacity. I knew his thoughtfulness. I knew his abilities. And I knew he lived in North Pole. So when the time came, and we were struggling a bit at the board level, and we needed some stability, and the board seat came open, and some of us, certainly me, got down on one knee and begged Mike to come aboard. And we said, come aboard. I said, come aboard. You don't have got any committees. We're not going to do any of that. And when you're ready to leave, you tell us when you can leave. And we will abide by that. So Mike did that. And those that were here, and we were struggling at that time, Mike became Mike became the fourth vote. And in a matter of one meeting, this whole board changed direction. One vote, one guy. And I've thanked Mike for that in his quiet way of rescuing this effort and setting the sails towards victory, because it was headed for the rocks, and Mike got it off the rocks. And for that, I thank him for ponying it up and doing what I've seen him be capable of doing more than one time, but certainly in this case. So thank you, my friend.
Thank you.
So Steve, of course, he's been involved in this damn thing from day one, certainly back before the legislature dumped this on us in 2013. So he will be missed, and he's a mile wide and a mile deep, as I tell people. And I thank him for his service, but I don't want to see him go away. I would like on behalf of just one guy talking, I hope that Elena and Steve can work out some sort of a deal that puts him on some sort of a retainer or some commitment, whatever you want to call it. That's between these three here. And because I want Steve to be around, and I want when the phone rings at 3 a.m., I want Steve there to help us be guided through whatever we need to have done. We're going to miss his expertise with GVA lingering, with Fort Wainwright, these two great big pieces that are going to make us success. Steve, to the extent he wants to be, and I you aren't going to just get away. To the extent he wants to be, I want to see him involved. I want to see him help us, and he will. And I'll just drop that whole thing. So thank you, Steve. We truly are going to miss you and Mike. But that had to make your heart skip a jump when you saw that truck up there. Yeah. Because that truck in that spot has been talked about for 20 years. And people said it couldn't be done. But we're doing it. So, anyway, thank you for the latitude, and thank you for the time for the board members, and to our two friends.
Thank you. So, that sign out there used to be an FPDC. It's gas is on the way, that sign. It's that black and white newspaper article. 15 years ago, Jim, it was in Jim's office. We were sitting there, and on the wall, he had a couple numbers. One of them was $15 gas, right? We started talking about how we could do it, and I think it was Interior Issues Council kind of got wrapped into it. And then we got money from the legislature through the borough to do a study or business plan, basically, for a gas utility. That was the spark of this whole thing. And it's been quite the interesting ride. So, like Jim, Gary said, our board's been very strong, got to totally divided, went over the bank, kind of crazy, where we were talking about LN Go units and just random stuff. But the first day we started, we had no money. Bob Shefchuk took $100 out of his pocket and opened a bank account. And that was it. That was the startup. So we had no place to meet. We met at the borough's offices one time, and we met the city for a while. It was interesting times, and there's been some great people on this board. Not all of them, I'll say that honestly, but there's been a lot of great people on this board. So right in this room, these are the great ones still. So. I know it's in good hands. I'm not worried about the long-term future. I think it's going to be great. But there were some rough roads. And I remember times when we were meeting once a week. And just like, oh, my God. You know, every week, it's just like, and they were driving out. We hadn't even bought FNG. That's a whole different, I mean, I have my battle scars with Ada. Gary loves them. I'm not sure I'm a fan of Ada. Even though I was actually officed in their building with them for 3 years when I was down in Anchorage, but and I have a lot of friends that work there. But just I don't know, Healy King Coal Days, my big stuff. But when they kind of bought FNG and then basically said you're going to buy it, that was the start of a really interesting relationship. And so we went through our due diligence, and it's quite the load to lift that up there. That's when we had a kind of a weird board. We got through that. Basically, Mike came on board with a fourth vote. That's really what got us over to that hump. And I think from then, and now he got there in this deal. We had Ellen Titan. It's always been old. I remember seeing it before. Back when I was at Golden Valley, and we went into tour, because Golden Valley was at one time I was going to look at buying FNG, and went down and got a tour with the Titan plant, and it was old then, and it's super old now. So now we've transitioned to a bigger, a new plant, which will serve us for many years in the future, and I think life's going to be good. But there's a lot of... Back when we first started this thing, I talked to Andrew Warwick, and I said, Andy, I said, would you be interested in being on this, on the IGU board, right? And he said, hell no. He said, that's too damn much work, because he just come off the whole Doyon utility, Fort Wainwright thing going on out there where they formed Doyon Utility. So I thought, oh, it can't be that much work. Well, he was right. It's been a lot of time. So I want to thank all you guys for volunteering to be on the board. Remember the first day when we said, oh, we're doing it for free. We're still doing it for free. We didn't have any money, right? We could charge ourselves credits or something, but and that just kind of hung on. So if you're here, you kind of want to be here, and that's in the right spirit of things. So, and I will answer the phone at 3 o'clock. That's not a problem. So I'll be there. You know, I'll keep monitoring her about board members and, you know, basic rule is that board members forget everything you told them last meeting when they walk into the next meeting, right? So you have to kind of start from scratch. You can't just assume that they remembered it all, because they don't. Like, I'm guilty of that too. So I'll just keep advising her and keep moving on forward and get this place to work. I know there's good people in the wings coming in behind me. So I'm not worried about that at all. So thank you. It's been a good run. So I also want to talk about one more cool thing. Did you guys see the video? The picture was cool. I like that picture. But the video that showed the little GPS tracker of all the way down, that was fun to watch. Mm-hmm. And then Roger gave us the presentation on just the PowerPoint, which was nice. So that was neat stuff. And you kind of get a little teary-eyed when you look at that truck coming down here, and you go, yeah, that's been a long time coming. And we got the first things, we were the first people to commercialize gas up in our slope.
So
that was pretty not we. I mean, we're collectively we. Everybody over here. So, and that gets to my last thing. So I am now poised. I'll probably do it tomorrow to make the formal application for top 40 under 40 for Elena, mm-hmm. and I'll be making that nomination, to get it online, and I'm going to send each one of you a letter to ask for a recommendation to go with it. But you a couple of them. I have a list now that I'm going to send that request out to you. So when you get it, please think about it. I think it's less than one page, and I'll give instructions on how to log it into the system. And lastly, if you don't have a 3D printer, they're really cool when they work. I have a bamboo X1 carbon at home, and they're really cool, right? And they print stuff, but when they don't work, oh my God, what a pain in the ass. So, just FYI. And the X1 carbon is actually easier than my son. My son bought an old create, it's like creative, or create, some word like that, like create. And it was, you have to level the bed and all of this, you know, and with a little super pain in the ass, right? I just push a button and say level the bed, and it goes, and does it automatically and start printing. But anyhow, if you need anything 3D printed, let me know. I have one, and I need to get some, burn some filament up, keep it working. So with that, thanks again. It's been a good run. And I think you guys will do fine in the future and stuff.
Thank you.
Keep up the good work. Okay. Are we going to have an executive session tonight? Yes, we are. So I need a motion to adjourn.
Mr. Chair, I move to adjourn the board meeting at the adjournment of the executive session.
Okay. Thanks for coming, Derek. And a second.
Second.
Okay. Got objection? Approved. And a motion to go into executive session.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I move that the executive session discuss lobbyist matters, which, if immediately known, could clearly have an adverse effect on IGU's finances, and to receive legal advice to include the IGU board of directors, the general manager, and the attorney, IGU attorney.
Okay. A second. Second. Without objection, we're in executive session. And thank you very much for